Welcome to the IHS Market Perception Podcast Series, an ongoing opportunity for us to pair up a member of our perception team with an IHS Market subject matter expert to discuss the latest hot topics impacting corporate issuers and their investor relations teams. I'm Michael Miller, Director IR Advisory, and I'll be your moderator today. On our podcast, we will discuss a topic that seems almost ubiquitous in the corporate and IR lexicon these days: environmental, social, and governance, better known as ESG. Joining me today are Brian Matt, head of ESG North America, who also moonlights as author of The Autocorrect. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
And we have Quinn Chen, director on the Perception Research Team. Welcome, Quinn.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
Hi. During this episode, we will get some unique insights based on Brian's expertise in the field and discuss Quinn's recent findings from the IHS Market Perspective Series. Now to start, Quinn, could you give us an overview of the IHS Market Perspective Series?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So first off, our team is engaged in daily conversations with the buy side and sell side. And as part of that, we're uniquely positioned to get real-time market feedback. In the beginning of March, when all of this was unfolding globally and especially in North America, we said to ourselves, you know, let us take the opportunity to ask the market about what their concerns are, what their advice is for IR and management teams in this day and age. So the first four parts of the series cover topics like capital management, virtual meetings and virtual engagement, and earnings practices. And now, as we're sitting here with Q1 earnings largely over, we really want to turn our attention to some of the longer-term thematic topics that are important to the market, like ESG.
Great. Thank you. And how did the questions around ESG come about?
Well, I think with COVID-19, the way that I saw it, and obviously it impacts all of our daily lives, there's such a human element to it. It impacts us on such a personal level, especially in the way that our employers, our local and state governments are approaching it. There's also been a lot of news flow, good and bad, about companies' actions during this time. On the back of that, we wanted to hear from the street. We wanted to dig into how investors are prioritizing ESG issues within their decision making. It's something that we talk about, you know, in our daily topics with the investment community, but we wanted to hear about how it was getting impacted now during this time of COVID-19. And more importantly, are investors balancing it with what's happening in the stock market to valuations and financials? So those are the types of topics that we really wanted to discover and explore in this next series.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you. Now, if we could turn it over to Brian, let's rewind a bit and talk about ESG, sort of the status quo. And what I mean by that is pre-COVID-19, what are the foundations of an ESG strategy, broadly speaking, from your perspective?
Thanks, Mike. I'd say, first off, any company that's looking at itself either during COVID or pre-COVID really has to determine for itself what are the material risks to its business that may not appear on their financial statements? What are the material opportunities that may not occur directly on their financial statements? In a way, that's really what an appropriate ESG strategy is. The determination of materiality, of course, then comes back to what does each group of stakeholders, shareholders, of course, defined by the legal definition of materiality, but also other groups of stakeholders, employees, debt holders, communities, governments, regulators are all different types of stakeholder groups as well. The standard really description of strategy around ESG is the materiality exercise that you do to combine the goals and needs of all of these different stakeholder groups, identify what any of those stakeholder groups are looking for, determine what is material and really needs to be disclosed, mesh that up with the business operations. So there are plenty of cases where if I improve my business operations in a certain way that's relevant to E or S or G, I get a net benefit for stakeholders and for the bottom line. Finally, identify what to disclose both today and tomorrow. Do I have any targets about what I intend to do in the future? Match it up to existing disclosure frameworks, make sure it's comparable, and then disclose both data around how the company is operating on a non-financial or extra financial perspective today, as well as the narrative. How do you interpret that data? How do you use it to make a decision, show that the company is improving its operations? That's really what things looked like before COVID. I would contend that even during COVID, these issues that a company goes through for identifying materiality have even intensified as they've gone through and really communicated with each of those stakeholder groups during COVID. Most companies have.
Well, that's a very thorough answer and really appreciate that insight. So one question that we do hear all the time is, does all of this even matter to the buy side? So how is ESG actually driving institutional capital and portfolio managers' investment decisions?
I think, again, before COVID, if you're looking back, the growth rate of assets that are following ESG strategies, it's very easy to manage and measure the dedicated assets on ESG. We had seen for the past several years, ESG assets in dedicated portfolios growing 20 to 25% within passive assets, even 15% within active assets. These are really some of the only areas that are growing within the asset management community, especially in the equity world. Just the increased demand from asset owners is really what's driving asset managers to be responsive and choosing to integrate ESG into their decisions. It really then depends for each firm, what does that mean for each investor? Do the rank and file analysts do the work? Do the portfolio managers do the work? Is there a dedicated stewardship team or outside data sources that are used in order to make appropriate investment decisions using these characteristics? That's some of the work that I think Quinn did the outreach on and spoke to investors both during COVID and prior to COVID as well.
Yeah, I think I can add some perspective there. Certainly going beyond the numbers that show growth over the last 4 to 5 years, we've had a lot of conversations, not only with the portfolio managers who are making the actual investment decision, but also some of their dedicated sustainability teams in-house. And I think the best word to describe the feedback that we've heard is nuance. There are times when you speak with investment managers and there's several layers upon which that decision-making is happening. It can happen all the way from the asset allocation stage down to the specific buying and selling of specific securities. Historically, the feedback's been pretty inconsistent. For example, an investment firm might have an overarching ESG policy, but then when you speak with some of the individual PMs and analysts, they may each weigh the importance of E, S, and G differently. Some maybe not at all. More recently, I think that school of thought is converging more and more, especially as topics like climate change and other themes rise in prominence. You certainly see more public scrutiny, and that's impacting the way that corporates and investment firms act. Now, it'd be unsurprising to hear that these investment teams and ESG teams sit side by side and share a research platform. The takeaway here is that as that box-ticking mentality shifts on the buy side, it certainly demands an evolution from the corporate issuers as well.
Brian talked a little bit about it, but now let's talk about the world with COVID-19. And how does this all change? On one hand, you could say that there are more pressing financial issues for many companies, and therefore ESG must be on the back burner. On the other hand, we're talking about a humanitarian crisis that is impacting society. So you could argue ESG is even more important than ever. So what is the market saying?
In the conversations that we've had in March and April of this year with those active investment decision makers, we are hearing that ESG is more important than ever. For a subset of these investors, they're witnessing firsthand that it's all playing out. These companies that have historically exhibited really strong governance and a strong commitment to ESG, they're the ones that are weathering the storm. They're more effectively managing their balance sheets, their strategies, their stakeholders beyond just their shareholders through this really volatile period. You know, I can quote one investor loosely who says, there's a fine balance between the interests of shareholders and the interests of other stakeholders right now. It's a complex governance question that needs to be addressed, and it can be a very significant driver to valuations at the moment.
Yeah, if you prioritize only one set of stakeholders against or over all of your other sets of stakeholders mid-COVID, you're going to have some issues. And I think that the governance process that defines how you balance all of those demands and needs is exactly what we're seeing in companies that maybe have made some missteps out of the gate and had to correct themselves. That's really from the company aspect. From the investor aspect, we're actually still seeing strong performance of ESG funds relative to non-ESG funds. I think there was a Wall Street Journal piece a week and a half ago that mentioned some of the work that MSCI and Morningstar had done, looking at the differences between those. There is some overweight that's natural in ESG funds towards large cap tech companies that maybe are more easily able to balance stakeholder needs relative to energy materials. Some other companies that face more acute issues here. Even just the most recent research that would be available covering first quarter flows did show ESG funds, even going into March's COVID impact, did see net inflows and actually very strong inflows into active ESG funds, as well as some of the passive funds that were launched early in the year via BlackRock, So those investment decision makers are still seeing new capital flowing into them and seeing those portfolios perform effectively, which tends to produce that flywheel, tends to produce the virtuous cycle of more capital flowing into ESG portfolios.
Yeah, and I do want to go back to an earlier comment that you made, Michael, that this is a humanitarian crisis, right? So the social impact part is an incredibly important topic for investors right now, more than ever. How companies treat their employees is viewed as a reflection of long-term business sustainability now. In the past, where we've heard that the S part of ESG might have been viewed as more of the fluffy element that you can't necessarily quantify, that sometimes it's done for goodwill or PR. Now you have these issues like pay cuts, layoffs, employee health and safety, privacy, corporate culture. All these things now have a real intangible financial implication in this pandemic scenario. That's not to say that they didn't in a normalized scenario, but I think the attention and spotlight is on S more than ever now.
Study we commented on last week, watch for a piece from State Street and George Serafin from Harvard. They took a look mid-COVID. They do have performance results for company stock performance, as well as State Street's net flows data mid-COVID. They matched that up against some of the data coming back from companies that produce the most news flow on certain topics. Companies that generated news flow on human capital topics or on supply chain topics in a positive way showed out performance during that period and actually showed net inflows of investment capital into them during that period. That's mid-COVID. That's not just March, but also April and into May. So there are some companies that apparently are doing this fairly effectively and also getting out there with the communication process, not just to one stakeholder group, but to all stakeholder groups, and showing how they do that type of balance against all of the demands on them at the time.
That said, there must be some naysayers, though.
Yeah, I think we do have to be realistic, right? Not every investor is out there saying that ESG is the most important issue for them right now. There's definitely a handful of investors who say that ESG is de-emphasized, deprioritized currently given what's going on with the economy and the political landscape. Quote one investor, companies need to prioritize survival because there frankly is no carbon footprint, no employee satisfaction if your business doesn't exist at the end of the day. We also have to remember that institutional investors have a fiduciary duty to their clients. So at the end of the day, for them, there's merit to ESG, but the distressed companies have to think about their survival. That's what's most important to some of these investors right now.
When I think about survival, I sometimes think about access to capital. I've seen companies maybe approaching new capital raises, being out in the market. ESG is an overlay that's now essentially required for every asset class in order to raise capital for equity, for fixed income, for the loans market, syndicated loans, even for access to bank capital. ESG overlays are now an important piece of each of those. So really, to survive and maintain access to capital, you do have to prioritize ESG as part of your reporting. BlackRock made one comment, though. They suggested as part of their engagement report for this year, if you need to slow work on your CSR report for this year, they see that as fine, but they still maintain their consistent pace of engagement through the year and planned for no major impacts to it over the long term.
So if we were to wrap it up, overall, we've covered a lot of ground here. What does this all mean for our listeners? What should they be thinking about as they plan for the second half of 2020 and beyond?
I think the key takeaway here from our end and the research that we've done is that the investment community is keenly aware and focused on how businesses are addressing the opportunities and challenges that COVID-19 presents. One of the key learnings from the outreach that we've done is that in the realm of ESG, you really can't go wrong with being extra transparent, extra proactive, and extra self-aware when you're engaging with the market. The feedback shows just how important it is to continue with your medium and long-term ESG strategy and to align it even further now with your business fundamentals and your financial performance. I think that the main finding here is that the case for materiality is bolstered in a post-pandemic world. And I think, Brian, you certainly have line of sight into some of the important and pressing issues that come to light in this environment and beyond. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's some things that are going to change in post-COVID with respect to ESG analysis. First off, compensation is going to be very interesting over the next year, both executive and employee compensation. Executives that are evaluated based on certain targets that are no longer achievable, certain plans that need to be reset for future markets that may not perform as well in a recession. That's going to be a very interesting question in both governance and from a social equity perspective inside the company. Tax will be another interesting question as governments start to need to make up for the deficits that they're fitting into for all the recovery programs that are being set up. Governments will need to fill their own coffers, and companies that are seen as separating themselves from the tax system may not be able to get away with it when investors are looking at them. There's going to, of course, be plenty of changes to supply chains. We think about overtime as likely companies shorten up some of their supply chains, maybe move more production domestically. And finally, emissions. You know, we think of climate change as a collective action problem, something that we all have to work together on over the long term. COVID is actually a collective action problem that we've worked on together across the globe. Maybe we've actually proven that we can work together to achieve global goals. However, there's the amount of emissions improvement that we're going to need in order to reach Paris Agreement goals, 1.5 degree, 2 degrees Celsius, et cetera, is massive and something that we're going to need a lot more than just a very short period of collective action to solve. So those are some of the things that will change over the next year.
That's quite a bit for our listeners to think about. We're really in a remarkable time, and ESG is clearly going to be an issue that investors will continue to focus on for quite some time. So I want to thank Brian and Quinn for their insights today and perspectives on this hugely important topic. And as a reminder, this is the first in what will be a multi-part series of podcasts. So please remember to click the link to subscribe. And in addition to thanking Brian and Quinn, I want to thank all of you for listening, and we look forward to speaking next time. Thank you.